And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 738. Going to do our 2025 projections comparisons, as we did last year. Pretty fun show, talking Steamer, ATC, Bat X, and more. First off, though, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric, and my co-host on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tid, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing great, Bubba. How about yourself?
Doing well. It's a Monday, getting back in the grind of things. Some people had the day off. I believe you did. So it's a plus for some. It's spring training. Everyone's hurt. It's fun. It's fun out there.
It is. It's a lot of some injuries for my DCs that I'm not really happy about that we'll talk about that I added to the list. But we're always excited for baseball to come back. And then once it does, everything seems to fall apart for our fantasy teams. But that's just the nature of the beast.
Everything goes up in flames, which is beautiful. I'm glad you added those two. I just saw what they were now because I finished doing my news right before my golf show, and the second to last one was a very prominent a part of that. So, and I was a big fan of that too. So yeah, let's break down some of the news because I want to talk as much projections as we have time for today. First off, we'll start in your neck of the woods, at least with your team, the New York Yankees. And like, this is where I wish I was good at Photoshop or something like that. Because the reports coming out of Yankees camp is Giancarlo Stanton has soreness or injuries in both elbows. So I almost want to do like the T-Rex, like make him a T-Rex. So he has like no elbows and just like the small arms. And like that's him now. I know it's stupid, but that's where my brain goes. But this is an injury he kind of had. He was dealing with during the postseason. Still dealing with, apparently. And they're pretty much already saying he's going to start the year on the IL, barring something crazy. So how do you think this plays out, and who benefits? That was the part I could have thrown a bunch of names out there. Like, does Spencer Jones get a shot all of a sudden? Is it Ben Rice? Like, how do you think this plays out in Yankee land?
I didn't think that far ahead yet, but yeah, I'm a big fan of T-Rex jokes. So I'm all for someone putting that together for whether it's a Patreon or just for you to shoot out onto Twitter. Yeah. It's frustrating. I mean, I kind of liked where Giancarlo was going. And at least in DCs, if you didn't have your util or if you didn't have a util only player already, I thought he was a pretty good value just for his power alone. I think I only got him on one DC. I'm glad it's just one for now. It's weird how it's both elbows. My assumption is that confused me. Like, was he benching too much or something? Like, I don't understand. I thought he was
doing much downward dog in the yoga position. I don't know.
He went in the other direction with the extremes. Yeah. I pulled up roster resource when you're talking about the IL stint potentially, and they haven't adjusted yet. I guess probably because it's not official. I mean, they could project it to him be missing time, and then yeah, I guess I don't know. They don't have the deepest bench, at least in terms of. I mean, I guess Ben Rice would be one of the obvious replacements because he could give Goldschmidt time off at first. He could give Wells time off at catching, presumably. I know Rice kind of moved off a catcher last year. Maybe Spencer Jones has a hot spring and he gets called up. That would be really awesome to see if he could have a good start to his career. I mean, I know he struggled last year. Jones did. And the Myers had some K issues, but he's arguably their top prospect behind Jason, who's going to lose his prospect status this year, hopefully. So yeah, it's unfortunate for the Yankees. The fact that it's middle of February and they're already saying he's probably going to miss time is not a good thing. So I think I heard I heard tennis elbow could be the thing, and that can hurt. So I get why this could really be an issue for Giancarlo.
And tennis elbow can linger. So that's not a good thing as well. But and then, you know, Trent Grisham's got the hamstring injury. That's why Spencer Jones could definitely be an option in that scenario. Kyle Hart. A lot of people might not know who Kyle Hart is if you didn't know any better. But Kyle Hart signed a one-year deal with the Padres. He played last year in the KBO, the Korean Baseball League, and was like sneaky good for KBO standards. You know, he threw 157 innings, had a 2.69 ERA. XFIP wasn't bad. Had a 22.8% K to walk, almost 29% strikeout rate. There's stuff to like there, but the question is, does it transition over? It's a one-year deal. Do you have any interest in a guy like Kyle Hart right now, who is projected to be the fifth man in the Padres rotation?
I do. It's mainly just because, I mean, when I play my 15s and most of the MLB pitchers are started at least rostered in those leagues just because of how deep they go. And so, yeah, I'm interested. he didn't really have. So I think the best way for me to compare overseas pitchers is to look at like what Yamamoto did and Imanaga, those guys. And but he's in the KBO, so it's a little different. Those guys were in the Japanese league. So I don't know. I would take a flyer maybe on one team on Hart, but I mean, the projections have him for a mid to high fours ERA, but with the not a really good K rate for Hart. But I mean, they're kind of just guessing more so than a typical projection would. I mean, there's not, I don't know how they account for foreign stats for these types of players. It can't be easy to do, but I guess if you play multiple leagues, take a flyer on them, and it's a good park in San Diego for Hart. They still have a good offense behind them in San Diego. They didn't trade anybody, which is good. I want them to compete, but yeah, I'm not going to be too excited with them. Maybe in my DC that I'm trying to finish up, I'll take a stab. But other than that, maybe one team, if that.
Yeah, I like the point you made. 15 teams, probably much more enticing. Seems like he's a very good floor pitcher. It's tough to gauge the ceiling, but like we saw, I believe it was Eric Fede went to the KBO, came back, and that wasn't bad. We've seen, obviously, Mikolas was good at first. That's fallen off. There's been a handful of them, but it's been pretty good, and you just got to see where it goes with the team utilization on the way back. But I'm definitely intrigued because a lot of those guys like that I mentioned already that came back from the KPO, more contact pitchers, not as good as strikeouts. We look at Kyle Hart over there, and again, easier to strike out hitters there than the bigs. That's been kind of proven throughout the last few years. Still had very good strikeout stuff without walking a ton of guys, like a 6% walk rate, near 30% strikeout rate. Those are things that should be able to translate at least decent at the big league level, you'd hope. So, yeah, I would take a shot on him for sure and see where it goes in the 15, 12s. If you want, like one of your last picks and you can make him an easy drop, fine. I think he's much more 15 team relevant for sure. Ty France signs with the Minnesota Twins. I kind of wrote this off of who cares, but because I think Jose Miranda is much better than Ty France. Now Rocco Baldelli's coming out and saying Ty France is going to be our regular first baseman, which I still call malarkey on. I think they're just trying to motivate Miranda. I don't know. So I'm just kind of staying away from the situation. Any thoughts on this one?
It's definitely messy. I don't get why they would sign a 30-year-old Ty France to block. I mean, Miranda's not the youngest guy. He's 26 and a half now, but they never really gave him a full-time chance to prove that he could hit. I mean, maybe they kind of did last year, and I mean, he could still break out a little bit, Miranda. So, yeah, luckily I never really drafted Miranda in DCs. And, like, I don't know, France, I was kind of high on him last year because of where he was going, and he had some good underlying data in 2023. But I, at least when it comes to Fab Leagues, I'm definitely going to avoid either one for now until something happens in spring training.
I agree. Just an obligatory Anthony Rendon's already hurt. It's going to be on the 60-day IL, having surgery on his hip. Who saw this coming? Shucks. You can add to that if you want. Like it pencils in Yoan Moncada. I wrote something coming out for Baseball HQ on Tuesday that could be the sign Christian Moore is going to be closer to getting playing time in LA. But I just wanted to throw out there that Anthony Rendon's already hurt and just making boatloads of cash to do nothing.
Right. I mean, and with Moore, it means that Renhifo could play third base if Moncada struggles. And then presumably second would be Moore's spot. But yeah, I mean, it definitely makes Moncada interesting for me in Fab Leagues. I think we talked about Moncada last week because of the signing, but now with the Rendon injury, it kind of solidifies his opportunity to take the third base job. So I'll be interested in taking Moncada.
For sure. Paul DeDong signs with the Washington Nationals. He hit 24 home runs for the Royals last year while hitting like 227, but still 24 home runs from a guy that basically went undrafted or his ADP's, you know, like around 550-ish in DCs right now. I see him maybe platooning with Jose Tenia and maybe giving some breaks throughout the infield. I don't like that he's going to be platooning with Jose Tenia, and I know that's where you're going to go with this too, but that just feels like that's the only reason to make that move, essentially. It's a one-year deal. It's cheap, but thoughts on Paul DeDong joining the Nationals?
Roster Resource has Tania paired with Rosario, who also some may have forgot to sign with the Nationals. I guess this really it has me concerned more about Luis Garcia Jr. more than Tania, because I think the platoon with Tania was kind of a given, especially with the Rosario signing. But now that we have DeJong and Rosario on the team, I mean, I really hope they don't do this to Garcia. They started playing him late last year against lefties, and he's one of their top future pieces. I mean, Abrams, Cruz, and Wood are better prospects, but Garcia's been there for a while. He finally broke out last year, and he deserves to get a full chance at full-time playing time. So, yeah, I mean, if anyone was taking a flyer on DeJong and DCs, it's not – kind of we're hoping for an injury now because he probably is not going to play more often than not. But, yeah, it's a – well, look at the lineup, too. There's a lot of lefties and switch hitters in
– yes, there are.
In Washington, which kind of – I mean, I like Tania and DCs. I have him on a couple teams, but – and I like what he showed last year, a power speed option. He's young, so I don't know. Maybe it's just insurance in case he struggles.
Yeah, that's where I'm kind of leaning. I think it's like a utility player. Rosario could even put him in the outfield, which puts DeJong at third. Like, just yeah, like you said, just please leave Garcia alone. Just leave Garcia alone. It's that simple. Like, if you guys ruin this, my God. Like, I liked the Nathaniel Lowe. I liked the Josh Bell signings. Those things are good. Let's not completely screw this whole thing up. Now, a big bit of news that dropped on Monday. Frankie Montas going to be out 6 to 8, or shut down for 6 to 8 weeks with a high-grade lat strain. And when I read that earlier, shut down to me means he's shut down for 6 to 8 weeks, then has to ramp back up. So in my mind, we're probably talking 8 to 12 weeks before you see Frankie Montas on the big league level, and that's nearly the All-Star break, depending on how that breaks out. Devastating stuff here. So he's off the board. What it comes down to now is it Griffin Canning season or is it Tyler McGill season? Where do you sit on that one?
Well, I'm upset by this news because I have my DC is cursed. First, I drafted Ben Joyce before the Kenley signing. I drafted really Cutter Crawford. Then we're going to talk about him next. And then I took Frankie Montas after Crawford. It's just ridiculous.
Don't you have Jose Tena in that league too?
I do. Yep.
Yeah, that's what I say. Yeah, it's just been like it was like it's just a joke now. So whoever Ben takes, just walk away. It's like a black cloud on that team.
Yeah, I don't know what I did to get cursed like this, but I hope I can kick
it. If it's all on one team, though, I would take that for a guy that drafts as many teams as I do. Just like put all the bad juju on one squad. Okay, fine.
I had a DC like that last year where I had like Giolito, Braxton Garrett, Kodai Senga. I had no staff. It was brutal. So
sounds like John Fish in our too early league last year. He had like no pitch. Yep. Kenta Maeda was his best starting pitcher by midseason.
I was close to Fish status with that one. But yeah, I was talking to Curlin about this with the Montas signing earlier, and I can't with Canning. I really can't go back to that anytime soon. I'm intrigued by Black. What was that?
PTSD.
Yeah, I forget if I ended up getting him last year because he was one of the streamers that we were looking at.
You did, because we talked about it a lot, the White Sox starts, yes.
Yeah, it was all the White Sox, and the Angels and the White Sox kept playing each other, so they had great matchups, and none of those pitchers could actually come through. It was the most frustrating thing.
No, they couldn't.
But I like Blackburn, I guess, a little bit more. I feel like McGill should be able to beat out Canning, though. That's Tyler McGill, but who knows? He struggled. They have a pretty dicey rotation, the Mets. It's really Manaea and Senga, who I have confidence in. And then after that, it's a lot of question marks. And even Senga has plenty of question marks. But, in Fab Leagues, I would probably prefer Blackburn to Canning in terms of, I don't know. Canning had really underlying numbers in 2023. That's why he was so highly drafted last year. And then he just fell on his face again. Blackburn, he's older, and I don't know. It's definitely – I'm not really targeting either one. It's more – the Blackburn call is more for my DC that I'm in right now. Other than that, it's – I guess wait and see who wins the job. Maybe they just go to five-man rotation now too because Montas – I don't think you really want to fit in Blackburn and Canning into a six-man rotation if you don't have to.
So. Yeah, don't. Yeah, definitely don't. I want it to be Tyler McGill. I feel it's more Griffin Canning. I like both, but I'm also a sicko like that. The Blackburn just scares me because of the back issues last year. I don't know where he's at now. He's supposed to be fine, but we'll kind of see how that all unfolds. But yeah, it's a mess, but at least we have a battle for the fifth starters role. It's always fun for a guy that does news on a regular basis. So we got that going for us. And then you mentioned Cutter Crawford. This one had layers to it. Cutter Crawford battling knee tendonitis. Okay, yeah, maybe he went snowboarding this winter or something. He's working through some. Now, apparently he hurt his knee in his third start last year and pitched through it, which is insane because, yeah, there was hiccups last year, but overall still not a bad first, like, full season type deal. Like, there was stuff to like. Heck, Ryan and I talked about him last Bubba in the Bloom in our part three about how intrigued I was. I think he could be better than Tanner Houck this year on his own rotation. And then this news comes out, and they say if it gets worse, you'll have to have surgery, which is not great either, but we're not there yet. Let's not go full panic mode. where do you sit on this Cutter Crawford information? Because this one kind of dropped just like out of nowhere.
It did. Yeah, I have Cutter on 2 of 6 DCs as well, like Montas. And I don't know. When I saw the third week or the third start last year, I was like, come on. Because if you had a pitch to it all year, I get waiting and managing it. But then when October hits for them, I don't think they made the playoffs, just get the surgery. I don't get it. And I get it may not be ideal to have surgery, but he could miss this year, it sounds like. And I hope he doesn't, because I like Cutter. He's a pretty good whip guy going where he's drafted. He has homer issues. That's why the ERA has been kind of high. But if you have pretty good ERA pitchers before that, and then you can, and you probably need some whip help, which is kind of how my team that I took him on just now was, it made sense. And yeah, it's annoying. I mean, just because it's, well, since it's tendonitis, I feel like it can get fixed somehow. It's not like it's a torn tendon or anything like that. Maybe it could lead to a torn tendon if he's not careful, but I'm not a doctor. I need Dr. Dave to talk, to opine about this one. But yeah, I'm going to be cautious with, well, luckily I don't really have any, well, I have the listener league for you and you and Bloom's league on Sunday, and I'll probably avoid Cutter there, but until we get more news, I'm going to try to stay away.
Yeah, I want to see what Cutter's prices go for in these drafts right now, in the Bubba the Bloom drafts, where League 2 is drafting as we speak right now. So I'm curious to see where those price ranges continue to drop out. And because like if it's just tendonitis, like he could have had a simple in and out patient procedure. Like they cut like two little things, like not a big thing, maybe out a month. Like you said, this could have been fixed and ready to roll right now. So we'll see how this plays out. Hopefully it's nothing crazy, like you said, because I do like Cutter as well this year. And if you're a Red Sox fan, that's not even the biggest drama you guys are dealing with right now. So things are getting interesting there in Boston. I'm just going to leave it at that until we actually have real news behind it. But some unhappy folks in Beantown at this point in time. And Ben Smile can light up a neighborhood right now because as a Yankees fan, when I mentioned that. All right, let's do it. Let's talk projections. This is always a fun one because, like, when Steamer first came out, Ben, we looked at projections with, like, the R values and all the different things we were looking at there to kind of find maybe outliers compared to ADP. That's a great exercise. Now we have ATC and the Bad X to compare them to. So, like, this is an exercise you did last year. I'll let you have the floor here in a second to kind of explain things. Like, we're going to talk about the differences between the three, like, kind of where things stand. But then we'll talk about players. And you obviously put your awesome sheet together that highlights guys that things vary a ton between rankings. That's where it's good because this will stand out. And now we can dig in on guys like which rankings do we want to believe or like why do they stand out, blah, 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 so on and so forth. So let's start with the basics here. When you broke these down, what did you see as a difference potentially between these projection sites?
Yeah. So first off, the projections that we're going to be talking about are Steamer, ATC, and the Bad X. And we're just going to cover hitters like we typically do. For those on the Bubble in the Bloom Patreon, these are the same projections that I posted with the Z-scores, where it's not adjusted for position. So catchers don't get a boost, nothing like that. So what I did was I calculated my Z-scores for each individual projection as opposed to the average of all of them. And I assigned a hitter ranking for each player under each projection system, and then I averaged it all together, and I averaged their lines together as well. So, for example, we have an average Shohei Ohtani line across the three projections, and then we have the average rank for Ohtani across the three, and then there's a standard deviation amongst the three systems. Spoiler, Ohtani's first in all three, and we'll talk about the top three real quick as we dig in. But And the outline here, the listeners can't see, but I'll cover real quickly, is the average stats for players who are projected for 300 plus at bats across the three systems. So when I do my Z scores, I cut it off at 300 plus at bats to get the population or in this case, it's a sample average or like my sample size is based on 300 plus at bats. And to no surprise to me, we've talked about this before in previous shows, but Steamer was the most optimistic with the projections. The average player on Steamer with 300 plus at bats had averaged 66.6 runs, 18.6 homers, 64.5 RBIs, and 10.6 steals. We won't mess with the average because of how I calculate it. Next is ATC. They averaged three fewer runs, about 1.5 fewer homers than Steamer, over three fewer RBIs than Steamer, and about half a steal less with ATC. And then the least optimistic of the three is the Bat X, who, and this is the version I believe that utilizes Statcast data more than the regular bat. And I think you highlighted a player that kind of reflects that, I guess the bias towards Statcast. There's a certain player that really it shows. But the Bat X is even a run less than ATC on average. It's roughly a half a homer less than ATC, which is already lower than Steamer. One fewer RBI and about not quite half a steal less than ATC. So Steamer has the most optimism for offense, then ATC, and then the Bat X. And this makes sense because ATC is a aggregate projection system, so it's going to take in Steamer and the Bat X towards the means. But, I mean, they're all, Ariel does do his own weights, which are his own secret sauce. He uses multiple systems besides the Steamer and the Bat X. But this makes sense that ATC is kind of in the middle, but it won't be that way for every player. There'll be players where ATC is higher or lower, and we may or may not touch on players like that. But just to keep in mind that Steamer has the highest offensive projections on average, followed by ATC and then the Bat X.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it kind of makes sense because I know when we talked Steamer earlier on, we were like, wow, they seem pretty optimistic on player A or player B or whatever. Yep. You mentioned Ariel. ATC makes a ton of sense to be right in the middle there. And with Cardi and the bat, the Bat X especially, he always is a little more cautious, it feels like. Now, some guys it'll pop, and we'll probably get into some of those throughout this on accident. But for the most part, he is usually more cautious on some players, especially younger players. That's just been a trend in those times. So it just seeing these numbers check out in a way that makes a lot of sense. I think like for a couple of years, ATC was the most accurate projection site. And then recently the Bat X has got it based on evaluations or whatnot. I don't know if that's accurate. It's something that rings a bell in my head with them. So that is interesting as well. All right. You wanted to talk about the top three on this list. And ironically, it's the top three in ADP. Shohei Ohtani, Bobby Witt Jr., and Aaron Judge. What did you want to hit on here? Because they all have zeros in the standard deviation column.
Yep. So that means that Ohtani, Witt, and Judge are 1, 2, and 3 in all three systems based on my Z-scores, which is saying that, it's pretty obvious that they're probably the three best players going into the year, but it's cool to see how the projections actually line up with the NFBC ADP. But I would take Witt above Ohtani still, I think, though. So.
Yep. I'm with you on that. That has been a discussion in the Discord lately. It's been an interesting discussion, but I think I lean the Witt over Ohtani situation as well. Time will tell if that's a smart move or not, but we'll see. We'll see on that one. All right. So I just made, I started going down the list and I took some that were big standard deviations near the top. The farther down the list you go, the deviations get bigger and bigger and bigger. Some stand out a lot. We won't be getting to all of them, of course. Maybe if it's really somebody really want to talk about, maybe we'll talk about them next week. But I think this will be a one and done and just kind of something to look at here. And maybe we'll sense a trend. Like, I didn't even get far enough down here. I see Mason Wynn is an outlier. That would be interesting to get me slapped in the face with Mason Wynn yet again. But let's start at the top here. And again, if there's something you want to jump in with at any time, feel free to do so. But I wanted to bring up Jarren Duran because to me, Jarren Duran is a tough one to draft in general right now, Ben. I'm using RotoWire Online Championship ADP over the last 2 weeks. It's about 13 drafts. I'm starting to slowly move my brain into fab mode here. So Duran has an ADP around 22 over the last 2 weeks. When we look at the projections, Jarren Duran has an 80 or a standard deviation of that is not the one. That's Ezekiel Duran. Jarren Duran has a 6.4, so still not massive, but for early on in the draft, it stood out to me. That's kind of what I'm looking at here. What do you see when you notice this? Because it's one of the first big changers, I'll say.
Yeah, it's and I should have said this before we started, but you're able to click on the plus sign right next to his name, right, and it expands out the each projection. You're able to do that, right?
Let me see.
The plus sign to look at his name.
Oh, baby. I don't have to go to Fangraphs. This is awesome.
Yep. This is, okay. Yeah, I like how this is set up.
Well done. This is awesome. Yep.
Yeah, so yeah, now you have genius. The three right there.
well, real quick, I'm going to stop you and make a joke because you probably didn't see it. So Ryan and I did a Patreon episode today, a YouTube show. Yep. And live on air, Ryan showed me on Google Sheets how to drag a cell and put it somewhere else because I had no idea how to do that. So that was, if you guys want to know how caveman I really am, it's not a joke, folks. This is a thing. And it did a whole Excel discussion on the live Patreon show. It was very, very entertaining at about 9:30 this morning. So So when I see that, I'm like, this is so cool, because to me, it very much is. Okay, back to what you were saying.
I love it. Always learning new stuff.
Yep.
So with Duran, so one thing to you kind of alluded to it in your little intro before you talked about Duran is, so little changes at the top, actually, no, this is backwards. So little changes in the bottom of the projections matter more to those players than it does at the top. But with Duran, his average rank standard deviation is 6. Okay, it's kind of like in line with Harper, Riley. It's not a lot, but the dollar value will change a lot when you're talking 6 spots in the first 2 rounds. So it's significant. And so when I break out the 3 systems that we use for Duran, ATC, of course, actually, this is one where ATC is actually the low end, I think. They have Duran for just 91 runs. Well, I say just. It's still a good projection in runs. 91 runs, 18 homers, 68 RBI, 30 steals, and a middle-of-the-road average amongst the three. All four of the counting stats are the lowest with ATC. So here's Duran as an example of ATC not being in the middle for whatever reason. Maybe there's other systems that we're not looking at that dislike him more. It's definitely what the case is. But with Duran, it's a range of 6 runs between the 3 systems, couple homers, 6 RBI, 3 steals. So there's definitely a decent, they're not all in line. And I think that's aligns with my thinking as well. I'm unsure with what to do with Duran because he was like a mid-round pick last year, going maybe in the 10th round of 15s, got pushed up to the 9th round in main events. And now he's going in the 2nd round and he had probably a career year. I mean, if he's able to top what he did last year, it'd be incredible. So with Duran, it's like, the power is good. It's not great. And that's why he's projected for like 19 homers amongst the three. 70 RBIs from a second round player is pretty low. So it's really, he's kind of like a little higher price CJ Abrams. And sure, based on his track record, Duran has a better average than Abrams, but the stat profile, maybe he's going to get more runs than Abrams. But other than that, it's kind of like Abrams. And I think Abrams has been someone we talked about with production shows. I don't know if it was because they were spot on in that show or because of the uncertainty with his projections. But yeah, with Duran, it's just, is he going to really, how much of last year is he going to repeat? What I'm trying to say. And it's the projections for where he's going are a little uncertain as well. But I mean, it's not a big difference, but 6 runs, 6 RBIs in an evaluation system, it could mean a lot. But at the end of the day, it's not going to kill you if he is on the low end. It's just that at this point in the draft, there's a little uncertainty with what he's going to produce.
And it's interesting, too, because, yes, they're a little all over the board. But like if you kind of go with Steamer, for instance, 97 runs, 19 homers, 71 RBIs, 31 steals, pretty much that's what he did last year for the most part. You know, you look at Duran, he had 21 homers, 34 steals. Yes, he scored 111 runs. That was tremendous. But most of these projections, the power, the speed, the RBIs are pretty much in line. It's the batting average. They're like 20 points below or on compared to last year. So that's kind of the caveat, I guess. But if you believe in what Duran did last year and you can believe he hit for average, then you probably take him at this pick. And the projections kind of agree at who he is. It's just they don't agree with the batting average part of it. So that's the part you have to convince yourself. What do you think in that regard? So we'll see. But yeah, I don't know what to do with Jaren Duran. It's very, very perplexing to me.
And the other thing I just want to add, I meant to say this before I talked about Duran, is that, so you kind of mentioned, well, so I said that how they're not that far away, but so the rank of Duran can change by the system being higher on another player. So someone else could be pushing Duran down in that projection system, whether, so like he's not that far away, but it could be other players are being either projected higher or lower. So that's also a possibility with why there could be a high standard deviation, depending on how it's just unique to each system. So that's why we're looking at it.
That makes a ton of sense. All right, let's talk about Michael Harris the second, another guy that I just never know what to do with year in and year out, because every year projections say, oh, Michael Harris, he's going to be a 2020 guy. Oh, Michael Harris is going to hit for great average. And, you know, I guess it technically is Michael Harris's fault, but in the end, he hasn't done that. He hasn't been healthy enough to do that year in and year out. But Like we saw 19-20, 18-20, 16-10 last year, 264 average last year, a massive drop off there. But projections are back in on him. But if you look at the, you know, the standard deviation, he's up to 9 now, where Jaren Duran was a 6.4. We're at 9.1. Again, a high draft pick, because when you look over the last 2 weeks of OC drafts, Michael Harris is an ADP of 40. So where do you stand on this, looking at the projections with Michael Harris?
Well, I will say that I'm not a big fan of Harris at his ADP. I have him ranked pretty lowly compared to it. And there's a different sheet in the workbook, but you don't have to worry about it. I'll say it now. So I actually have what the actual rank is for each system. ETC has Harris as the 30th overall hitter. The Bad X has him as the 33rd. Steamer has him as the 16th. So this is all driven by Steamer. And so when people were first drafting, or not first drafting, but when Steamer first came out and people were only drafting to it, Harris popped out really well because of how, I mean, they have him for 25-21 still, 25 homers, 21 steals for Harris with 94 runs. And Steamer loved him last year, I just remember. And I think overall the projections did like him. He's still a 2020 player, but he just can't do it. He hasn't been able to do it. And that's why I'm down on Harris. I am more pessimistic with like ATC and the Bad XR. They're starting to chip away at the high numbers that Steamer has for him. Steamer even has him for the best average contribution, probably pretty good amounts. The ATC and the Bad X are pretty close with what they have for an average contribution. And it's, mainly it's injury driven, but I don't think his paces even match what he's projected for still. I mean, I don't have that data to back it up, but it seems like for whatever reason, the systems they love Michael Harris. And until he finally does it, I mean, I took him once last year at the 2-3 turn, but I'm not going to take Harris in the top three rounds in a 15 teamer anytime soon. And I don't care what Steamer says.
Yeah, I'm with you. I can't get behind it. It is interesting to see how far and away Steamer is on him. Like once you mentioned the rankings, I looked even closer. I'm like, oh my goodness. Yes, every statistical category, he has a bump. Even as far as plate appearances or at bats is a massive bump. And then you have it is nice that you have the cumulative between the three below that to kind of even things out a bit, but it's obviously skewed because of Steamer in that mix. But yeah, I'm off of Harris, and I made a beer bet with Ryan on today's Patreon show, and it goes with the next individual on the show here is Wyatt Langford. Wyatt Langford, when we look here, has a standard of 8, but I wanted to bring him up because I think he's polarizing is the right word, but a lot of people don't either love Wyatt Langford or you don't know what to do with Wyatt Langford type thing, because the overall season wasn't great, but the second half was strong. Still finished with 16 homers and 19 steals, hitting .253, so almost a Michael Harris stat line for those keeping track at home. But Langford right now, like you have your Churios and your Merrills going early. Langford's up to ADP 33, as high as 26, so he's finally moving up there. But for a while, he was going much later than those guys. But if you look at the projections here, this one is skewed in different categories by different projections. So this one's a little more interesting to me because of what I'm looking at. But I'll let you have the floor here. It seems like the Bad X likes him the most, though.
I pulled that up. Yeah, you're correct. Bad X has him as the 32nd hitter. ATC has him as the 39th hitter. And then Steamer's actually lowest. They have him as the 48th hitter. So this is fun how it's all over the place with these guys.
Yep.
He's basically Michael Harris light with the projections.
Agreed.
Little higher, little over 20 homers on average, and just below 18, or just below 20 steals. And so the uncertainty with Langford is kind of reflecting of how I feel about him, because I do want to draft him for the 2020 with a decent average upside. He's going to hit third for the Rangers, who I think will bounce back as a team, and that should really help with his run production. But with Langford, his original ADP of like the 40s was kind of where I wanted pitching in DCs. And then I don't know if I trust him as a second round hitter now that he's moving up. I have to figure out my strategy for my fab leagues pretty soon. And I do like him as a player, and I don't know, like the Bad X. So I'm assuming he has good Statcast. I forget what his Statcast looks like, Langford's. So that maybe that's why the bat's very high on him. But yeah, it's just, I did like the second half or however many months he bounced back last year. And it's just, I don't know if I want to pay that full price. I know you're a big fan. I think you've taken out the 2-3 turn at least. And I don't know if it's been an OC, but I know you have in a DC at least. And it's, you're banking on him to really come through at that point. It's a little more it's a risk you can kind of take in a fab league. So I have to really try to figure out if I'm willing to take that risk myself.
Yeah, when it comes to Langford, first off, his stat cast 9.3% barrel, 43.4% hard hit, 111.9 max EV last year. So not bad for a first-year guy. Really struggled in the first half. But with Langford, a lot of it's like I like him a lot. The new price is not as enticing, obviously. But if you take a power bat like in round two, like a Riley Alonso or something, then Langford makes sense type deal. Get another 20-20 guy. A lot of it's team dependent. Like if I'm already good in steals, probably not reaching for a guy like Langford. It just kind of depends on how I'm building. But I do think he has the skill set to be a early, like a 1-2 turn guy going forward. So if you believe in that, then you take the chance at that point. It's just what do you believe in? And I think he's got the skills to do it. It's just a matter of will he do it? And now the price makes you actually have to make that decision, where early on in draft season, you did not have to reach that much for him. Lawrence Butler, another guy that is on the move right now. When we look at this chart you made here, now we're getting a little bigger, 13.5 standard deviation here between the projections. Lawrence Butler has an ADP. Oh, man, this happens when you draft with Jenny Butler. It has her name on every function here as you're trying to search. So give me a second. We will get to Lawrence here in a second. Lawrence Butler has an ADP of, as it is on the rise. Michael Harris is below Langford, by the way, if you guys are paying attention to that. Where is Lawrence Butler? My God. Lawrence Butler, ADP of 66 over the last two OCs. So where are you standing on this one? Because more deviation means, oh, man, ATC, huh? Okay. Or steamer, I mean. Sorry. Yeah. What do you got on this one?
Well, I just took Butler in that DC that's cursed, so hopefully nothing happens to him. Yeah, I know you're a big fan. Yeah, this is really – so I wonder what would be like if Steamer never came out, because I think Butler was going around pick 100.
Yep.
Or when you started drafting. And then when I started drafting, Steamer had been out, and he went up to where he is now, essentially. But now – and I pulled up the individual ranks. The Bad X has Butler as the 55th hitter. ATC has him as the 48th, and Steamer has him as the 29th hitter. So a third round hit, a player for Steamer at least. And it's so if you believe in Steamer, he's kind of a value still, Butler. But the average is questionable. He's a roughly all three systems have him for slightly above average. And but so the Bad X has him for 14 steals versus the Steamer's 21. And that's a big difference. That's 50% difference between the two. And that's a lot of uncertainty. I'd be curious to see what his ATC metrics are, because I'm not the most well versed in those, but I know Ariel tries to quantify the within projection or the profile risk versus the projections risk across all the projections. And I'm sure Butler probably lights up those metrics pretty well. And I mean, they almost have a 20 run difference. Steamer has him for 92 runs, and you have 77 for ATC and 75 for the Bad X. That's insane. The power's relatively close. Yeah, so it kind of I think it's another good example of how Lawrence Butler, another well spoken about player in terms of where to draft him and is he worth it, and the projections are showing the same uncertainty. So I'm not surprised. It's just I think if you go pitching heavy, he's worth the risk at that point in the draft, because that's what I did in my DC. I went hitter, three pitchers, then I went back to Butler. And he has good power. I think the steals will be closer to 20. I'm not sure why the Bad X is so low on him. But I remember we did talk about Butler having a surprisingly low sprint speed. I think he's as fast as Brent Rooker, which was surprising.
It's crazy to say out loud.
Yes, but it's what the data says, though. And so I get why the Bad X would be low in that regard. But Kyle Tucker has shown that you don't have to be the fastest guy to steal bases. He has awful sprint speed, but he still gets 20, 25 great steals. Comp. Yeah. And so I think Butler's fine. It's just I was uneasy with him as my second hitter in that DC. I don't know if I want to do that again. But I think he definitely has some good upside. It's showing that it's a risky pick at that point.
Adam Brunson in the chat here says, I think the volatility of player stats is interesting. In general, I only use projections as a guide for a player's potential and or opportunity, if you will. For example, I don't draft a position player based on plus minus of, say, 10 RBIs or 5 stolen bases, or who I just believe in more. Yeah, projections are supposed to kind of give you something to think on. That's for sure. Spore in the chat here says sprint speed can enhance your stolen base upside, but it is not required if you're a smart runner. He says see Chase Utley. I was going to say see Albert Pujols, who didn't steal a lot, but every time he's look at Paul Goldschmidt.
I was going to say Goldschmidt now is a good example of it too. You got to be smart.
These guys can move. I want to ask you before we go too much deeper here, because I have a feeling we're going to have to do a part two to this, as I have us on a strict time limit today. And there's a lot of names I'd like to probably discuss later on. It stands out to me, like looking at Lawrence Butler, and you mentioned a lot of this, but like Steamer, and I think that's an awesome point you made, is Steamer comes out so early. Like I remember it was FPAS Sunday. We got back from golfing and everyone's sitting there in the bar looking at Steamer on their phones. And I'm like, whoa, it came out. Cool. This is sweet. And then we waited forever for ATC and the Bad X because they do their systems. You know, Cardi's got football, so on and so forth. So it's interesting, for like 2 months, 3 months, we're just like in love with Lawrence's projection with Steamer. Like, this is the cat's meow type thing. So then when, you know, these other two come out again, you know, ATC and the bat and whatnot, you got Steamer just 609 at-bats compared to like 533. Like, everything just jumps. Now, I guess if we want to get really nerdy on this, what's like the per at-bat number? If you put ATC in the bat up to 609, they might be above Steamer, if that makes sense to the conversation. I know you probably have something in your aggregator or something over that can do that, but just speaking out loud, we talk about the difference in the home runs, the runs, the RBIs, all that. That to me, it dictates due to at-bats personally. So the projections might agree to the skill set, but they're just projecting for lower at-bats. That's something that I like to look for in a projection system. Maybe I'm just speaking out of school.
Well, Bubba, you have me curious about that right now, actually.
I think those two might be higher on him than Steamer just based on a per at bat basis.
Hold on, let me see if I can get this real quick, because I know we don't want to spend too much time on Butler, but it's a interesting point.
No, it's all good. While you're doing that, Jason Wenick's watching right now. There's the live Bubba and the Bloom auction going on, and he says, I'm being blamed in the chat for the high prices on catchers. Glad I could be a part of something, guys. Thank you.
All right, so to Bubba's question, so I have divided each of the stats, runs, homers, RBIs, and steals by a system's at-bats to get like a run per at-bat ratio, for example. So for runs, ATC has a 0.14. Steamer's 0.17. The Bad X is 0.14. So Steamer is still, on a per at bat basis, still higher on runs. Homers is 0.04 for ATC, 0.05 for Steamer, 0.04 for the Bad X. The two would round up to 0.05 if we did that. And then RBIs is 0.12 for ATC, 0.14 for Steamer, 0.15, 0.13 for the Bad X. So the Steamer is still slightly higher. And then steals is 0.035 for ATC, 0.038 for Steamer, 0.026 for the Bad X. So Steamer's pretty close. Yeah, because Steamer is closer to Steamer. I mean, yeah, Steamer, of course. ATC is closer to Steamer on the steals. So I don't know how meaningful those numbers are, but they're still slightly higher for Steamer when you go at a per plate appearance basis.
Yeah, I was just curious. It stood out that there was a gigantic gap in at bats, which made it a little different to me, but I digress. All right, let's go to Jose Altuve, who has a differential of 12.7. And this is a veteran that some like are like, okay, he's got to slow down after going 20-22 last year, 17-14, 28-18 with a 295, 311, 300 batting average. Like, the dude is just not missed. And last year, his ADP was like around 100, which was wild. It's coming in at 59 right now over the last 13 weeks of OCs. So you got to pay for him. He's the second baseman off the board. In that regard, but when you're looking at the projections here, like I said, it's a 12.7 differential, and once again, it seems like we have a little Steamer love to the situation.
Yeah, and then I looked at the at bats. Steamer has him for roughly 50 more at bats than ATC and Bad X Altuve, and another one where it's almost 20 runs more. Well, he has 10 more runs on Steamer than ATC, and he has 18 more runs on Steamer than the Bad X, and that's a lot. So that's really driving that standard deviation. Even five homers between Steamer and the Bad X. And so this is a good example. It wasn't who I was thinking of, but Altuve has awful Statcast metrics, and he has for a while. So I'm not surprised that the Bad X is really down on the power. They have him as a 17-15 guy with fewer than 70 RBIs and not even 80 runs. And so they're expecting him to decline. The Bad X has Altuve for the lowest average contribution of the three systems. And he's never had a good expected average either, Altuve, which is he's been able to outperform that, kind of like Bogaerts has. And with the age, I'm cautious about drafting Altuve at that point. I almost just rather take a pitcher and then take another second baseman later. Even though 2020 would be nice, it's just there's a lot of risk with the age, and it's really just the age. And then he's always been able to outperform the Statcast metrics. Will he be able to do that again? I don't know. Now that he's 35 maybe, or whatever he is. So, yeah, I'm definitely uncertain with Altuve as well, just like the projections are.
Yeah, I like – well, first off, the projections, this one's a little different than what we talked about with Butler, where there's valid differences between all three, which is interesting. So it's kind of a mixed bag here. But, like, just from a draft, like, just theory, I guess, which is interesting. You mentioned, like, if you want a 2020, I don't want Altuve. I agree. Like, if you're looking for 2020 in that pocket of the draft, just take Lawrence Butler. He's 7 picks later. Like, just move him up your ADP. I'd rather gamble on that, per se. Now, the batting average could be a lot different. There's no denying that. And it comes to second base, is you got so many second basemen later that are almost all the same type of oatmeal, one would say, in the Discord. So I'd probably just steer in that direction. Like, I like Altuve a lot. I just haven't paid the price for him. And the projections volatility kind of makes me feel like I shouldn't. All right, Ezekiel Tovar. Now, this is another one that last year everyone drafted him thinking, okay, we're going to get a ton of steals. Didn't get any, really. We got a whopping six stolen base. We got 26 homers. Dude hit 269, played nearly every day for the Colorado Rockies. If you like Ezekiel Tovar, you have an ADP of 130. When you look at the projections here, his difference is 11. And I wanted to bring him up because it's a guy that I know myself. Maybe it's a bad thing, as I just kind of gloss over him because I like the elite shortstops, or there's the pocket of when Peña Swanson that I've become a big fan of. So I kind of just move past Tovar. But in the end, it's like if he runs like the bat says, this is interesting. So when you look at these projections here, what stands out to you?
Yeah, so I pulled up his individual ranks, and the BatX is the highest. They have him as the 40th hitter, which is pretty good for where you're getting Tovar.
Yep.
He's going past pick 100, like 120, 130, I think. ATC is a 51st hitter, Steamer 62nd. So they're all saying he's a value where he's going on average. With Tovar, though, for me, it's the under the hood, it's disgusting. Like he strikes out a ton, he walks a ton. I don't know why he stopped stealing, but we did share in the Patreon or the Discord how the Rockies want to run more. At least that's what the manager said, which is good for Tovar because he is fast. I think I took him once, maybe on the Gladiator that we're sharing.
Yeah, probably.
Just because, like, at that point, well, also, too, so I probably prefer having Wynn or Peña later, but if you're uncertain that you're going to be able to get those guys, I can see why you would take Tovar where he goes, just to make sure that you have a solid shortstop if you need one still. And he has – so if he didn't play in Coors, I'd be completely out, but because he is in Coors, I think he can still provide a solid average, whereas his almost 30% strikeout rate is going to say he's not going to. But I know he sold out for fly balls. That's why he hit so many homers last year. I think he had 26 or something like that, Tovar. So they're kind of projecting him to go back down to 20 across the board. It's just like there's some very – so he doesn't vary that much. I think this is more about other players getting pushed up around him or below him, Tovar. The biggest stat I can see a big difference in is probably the average. And I guess they're struggling – the different systems are struggling with the Coors factor versus the K rate. And so do I. So this kind of makes sense why Tovar is kind of standing out in terms of a high standard deviation amongst the rankings.
Yeah, I agree. You can see the projections are all over the board, like 9 steals, 6 steals, 12 steals. It's just like they don't really know where they want to sit with him. They're all at least over 600 at bat, so it's not like they're skewing him that low. But one thing you mentioned there, and that's why I'm going to jump to a different name, and we'll kind of pivot back here, is you mentioned if like you missed on shortstop, it's not a bad one to take. Well, I want to throw out Willy Adames now, because Willy Adames is a player that a lot of people are really down on now he's in San Francisco. Then there's other people that say, okay, he's like the last of the first wave. You got to get one of these guys before Willy, or Willy's like the last one before you start looking at middle infielder. But if you miss Willy, maybe Ezekiel fits in now, is why I wanted to bring that up, because what you said, and I don't disagree with it. Adames has an ADP of 93 over the last 2 weeks in the NFBCOC. He came off 32 homers, 21 steals last year. That steals was a massive bump. If you take the steals away, he probably lingers more towards Ezekiel Tovar. And that's why I wanted to bring this up, is I think they're closer than a lot of people give them credit for, the more I've dug in this offseason. So when you look at Willy Adames' projection, he has a 13.6 deviation, where Tovar had an 11. Where do we sit on Willy Adames as things spread out here?
All right, so ATC has him as the 50th hitter, Adames. The BatX 51st, so they're basically right in line. Steamer's the 74th. But then when you look at their lines, they're almost identical. So this is the case of Steamer being higher on other players and pushing down Adames in their rankings.
Good point.
Which is kind of – so Steamer was the first one. So people were just probably going off of the surface stats last year as to draft him so highly. Well, and then he signed with San Francisco, so then he got pushed back down. But he's still – so he's averaging like the 60th hitter. And where he's going, that's a value – now where he's going is a value. I got Adames in the, like the 100 teens in a DC, and I'm like, I'll take him. I wasn't planning on it, but that's where he was going last year before he had the monster year. So now he's kind of going back to his 2024 ADP, and people haven't really said that they want him still at that price. I'm all for it. If I have the average cushion, I'll take Adames at that point. I don't need the 20 steals. He's going to put up close to 90 runs, 90 RBI. He's going to have mid-20s homers. They all project him for 25, and he'll probably get close to 10 steals ideally. I mean, they had Chapman run last year, so I think this is a product of it's just a product of Steamer being higher on other players, and they're pushing, and it's pushing down Adames, but they are actually pretty similar in terms of the actual numbers amongst the three, which is kind of interesting to see.
It is interesting, like you said, the great point, because you mentioned kind of earlier in the show is some might have people higher than the others. That's why the differentiation is more. So the fact they're all ranked about the same, but Steamer has them 74th, or I think that's what you said, is it's a big drop off from the 51st, 52nd, and whatever he was at in the other two program projections there. It comes down to the steals, as like I said, and it's the same question we had with Matt Chapman. Will they let him run against the first time Chapman did it? First time Adames did it. Obviously Adames did it with the Brewers, Chapman with the Giants. Giants didn't let Tyro run. Who knows? There's so many questions as a Giants fan that I've had fielded in my direction that I don't even know what to tell you. But then Fitzgerald ran, so I digress. If Adames runs, this is awesome. I agree. He's worth the bump. But if you also believe in projections, they all have him hitting anywhere from 569 to 586 at-bats, where all the projections hit over 600 for Tovar. So if you're someone that believes in accumulation, which used to be the go-to phrase in getting at bats in DCs, then that might be a nod towards Tovar at the same time. So it's a very interesting discussion between the two, and I think the projections, make different cases for different parts of their skill sets, I guess, if that makes any sense at all.
Well, for what it's worth, they have Tovar ranked better than Adames, which is not how they're getting drafted.
Yeah. So, which makes sense now that I keep going in circles talking about it, it would make sense that Tovar should be ranked higher. And
it's the average, I think, is the biggest part,
which makes a lot of, which is really weird too, with Tovar playing in one of the biggest Babbitt ballparks in all of baseball, that his average is the thing that deters him.
It's helping Tovar.
Yeah, that makes more sense. I'm like, he's getting like 265 or 270. There you go. All right, a couple more here. Josh Naylor. This is one that, there's been discussions, all the park factor things that have come out, like, oh, no, he's going to take a big hit going to Arizona. Maybe. He still crushes baseballs. Coming off a monster year in Cleveland, first year in Arizona coming up. ADP's 97 over the last 2 weeks. Where are we standing on a guy like Josh Naylor, who has a difference of 10, according to three projection sites?
Naylor is the 43rd hitter on ATC, which is surprising, the 54th on Steamer, and the 63rd on the BatX. I can see the BatX being lowest because he doesn't have the best StatCast data, Naylor. So looking at the projections, they all have him for 7 steals, which is interesting. There's a range of 10 RBI, which is a lot, especially at this point in the draft. That's a big difference. A range of 4 homers amongst the three. Runs all in the 70s. So, yeah, there's a little uncertainty, and I think that could be the change in park is driving this. I mean, it has me questioning it now, too. Some people in the Discord made some great points about how Naylor went from,
best lefty hitting ballparks in baseball.
Yeah, to Chase is now one of the worst or something like that. Mm-hmm. And we talked about Naylor in the BABIP show. He had a pretty low BABIP, but he's slow, and he's a lot of ground balls. So, he's more of an accumulator, I think, and I don't know if the average is guaranteed to go back up. All three of them have him up for a decent average. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm definitely cautious about drafting Naylor because I prefer Vinny P now more. I almost rather just wait and take Berger over him because Yeah, Bubba's Burgers. Yeah, it's a given. I shouldn't have even said that. Yeah, so I don't know. I was working on my rankings, like retooling for Fab Leagues today, and I kind of left Naylor where I had him for DCs. It's just I might have to think about it, and maybe I might have to move him down a little bit. But yeah, it's not a big change amongst the systems, but there's enough where they're definitely unsure about what to expect now that he changed teams.
Yeah, there's a lot of volatility with him. And plus, like, he's always been good, but he's never played full season. He finally played enough games last year, had this monster year. Is that sustainable? Like, there's a million questions with him, especially when a lot of projections use, like, you know, three-year averages or something as part of their formulas. So that'll skew the Naylor system as well. I'm going to jump to Vinny P because you mentioned Vinny P, and that's a guy that I've been a big fan of. Some people think I'm crazy. Some people are on board. You seem like you're a bigger Vinny P than Naylor. I think I made that observation on some show with Ryan. I was told I was crazy or something. Vinny P, which is not abnormal to that show. Vinny P has an ADP of 122 over the last 2 weeks. It's a guy that just hasn't put together a full season, which is fair because of the shoulder injuries that should be fixed. I think he's got, you know, 25 plus homers, which the projections some believe in. Plate skills are great. Average, I think, will be better than Josh Naylor. Time will tell. When you look at the projections and then your own thoughts, because you were going to, you know, maybe take Vinny P over him, where do you stand on those?
This one's weird. The Bad X hates Vinny P. Steamer has him as the 47th hitter, ATC the 53rd. The Bad X is the 87th.
Well, real quick, just for the Bad X, like, he's at a 7.1, 7.4% barrel the last 2 years, 45.8, 40.1% hard hit. Last year, he had 112.2 max EV, but as a whole, I guess that's probably a little down, I guess.
So I pulled him up on my draft sheet, and he has a positive EV, positive hard hit percentage, positive XBA, positive X slug, Vinny P. And his contact rate is almost 90% overall. I mean, I don't know how Derek weights the different components of Statcast for this, but I don't know. And it's really shown in the homers. So Bad X has Vinny P for 19 versus 26 by Steamer, 23 for ATC. Steamer has him for 14 more runs than the Bad X. ATC is kind of in the middle, more on the low end. And the RBIs, too. Steamer has him for 12 more RBIs than the Bad X does. And that's making a big difference at this point in the draft. He put up almost 100 RBIs and he missed a month last year. So, yeah. And he's going to hit for a solid average. He doesn't miss. He's not the fastest guy, but I mean, he's a good enough hitter where I think he'll have a pretty good average. The runs may not be the best, but if he's around 80, I think that's fine at that ADP. It's just the power uncertainty, and I get that with KC. But if you can get like 100 RBIs at that point with a good average, and he's not going to hurt you in runs and homers, I think it's fine. So I trust Vinny P's profile more than I do Naylor's, even though the projections I think like where's Naylor. Is he ahead of him? I can't see him right now. Where's Naylor? Oh, yeah. So the overall, the projections like Naylor more, but it could just be because of the Bad X dragging down Vinny P. And I think I'm going to flip-flop. I have these guys flip-flops, like I said, and I'm going to stick with it.
I like it. I like it a lot. We will do a second projection show. I think there's a lot of names that were worth discussing, kind of how we are looking at different angles to it and whatnot. So I want to get to a couple listener questions here before we head out on this, and we have a question from Sweaty Ray. Sweaty Ray. Interesting name, Sweaty Ray. I just want to make sure I got that right there for a second. He brings up Mark Vientos, who I could see being a very polarizing one. He has an 18.7 standard deviation here. What do you see when you break down Mark EV?
Let me pull him up. The 30 homers is nice.
Steamer likes him again.
Yeah, and they were the first system out. The runs are pretty eye-opening amongst the – so 69 for the Bad X, not nice. ATC 73, Steamer 80. Steamer has him for like 10 to 5 more RBIs. Steamer actually has him as a neutral average versus negative with ATC and the Bad X. So I had my concerns with Vientos with it being the strikeout rate A and then also the homer to fly ball when he hits a lot of ground balls. So I have him ranked pretty fairly. He's ranked after Stephen Kwan and Xavier Edwards in terms of valuation, because he's a 2.5 category guy.
Yeah, it's fair.
No steals, no average, decent runs, and then hopefully good homers and RBI. Bregman's ahead of him. Pena, Bogarts, Happ, Trout, Vinny P's ahead of him. Bo Bichette. People are really relying on Vientos to take a leap of faith. And so I still think where he's going is fine in ADP of Vientos. I just don't – seeing where he's ranked in regards to everybody else has me a little concerned that it's maybe an overpay. But I don't know. It's just the three-category profile, I think, is really what's doing it for him. And there's no way to argue against that. That's who Vientos is right now. And I think it's a fair way to project them, and it's Steamer. I don't know why Steamer would be higher, but like I said at the start of the show, there's higher in general. Let me pull out his ranking real quick, because I want to see if it's a big difference amongst the three systems. I know you were pressing your time, but I want to see this real quick. Vientos is, oh yeah, well, it's the Bad X. 61st on Steamer, 70th ATC, 97th on the Bad X, which is kind of weird.
Well, Cardi has his way his projections work. Younger players that haven't proven themselves tend to not score out too well compared to other sites.
Yep.
It's a trend. The last question we have here is from John Anderson, and I'm really wondering what John's up to these days. If this is the question that piques his interest, he says, Jacob Wilson of the Oakland Athletics, or Sacramento Athletics, apologize, is interesting to him. He has a 16.5 differential. Projections, like if he's the everyday shortstop, projections have him very low on at-bats. This is where you have to kind of project out where you think he plays. But what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, he's someone I actually moved up pretty highly in my rankings when I redid them today for shortstop, just because I don't know, he's like a really late Arias, I guess, is the way I'm considering Jacob Wilson. And so the number that we have in the weighted average column here is going to be a lot higher if he does get closer to 550, 600 at-bats, which he should. Well, he's going to hit low in the A's lineup, Wilson would. So I guess that's that would hurt him in terms of playing time. I think this is one of where he's ranked so low, and then there's little differences amongst the three projections that he's slightly off in the rankings for each one. But they're pretty fair, with like a 7 homer average, 5 steals, 50-50 runs in RBI. So definitely like he would be like I don't want him as my MI, but if I have a second baseman as my MI, I would take him as my backup shortstop, maybe, type of thing.
Yeah, I remember like last year in DC's thinking about him as a late pick. I think I actually wrote about him on the AOS PT Tomorrow, like in August or September last year, about it's his time to shine. He's a batting average asset, very little power. If he leads off, there's a lot more to like about him, but they're probably putting him at the bottom of the order. So that's a stinger. Like the skill sets, he seems like a very good real life hitter, where coming to fantasy might be a little tricky transition. Let's put it that way. So deep leagues, DCs where you just need depth, those kind of pieces. Like I'd rather have him over like a Brian Rocchio late in the DC for sure. Like it's my third or fourth shortstop, but overall it's a very tricky situation. All right, Ben, we're going to wrap it up there as I have to run, unfortunately. So we will come back and do some more hitters here, because I want to get deeper into some of these guys. I want to talk Junior Caminero and some other players that might stand out just off the top of my head. Caminero probably has his issues because the Bad X doesn't like young players. But that's just off the top of my head. I haven't even looked at it. I'm just guessing right now. But we'll get to that and much, much more. So as always, thanks for joining me, my friend. And we'll do this again next week. Make sure you follow Ben on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. I am at BDIntric, and this was Benched with Bubba, episode 738. Catch you all next time.